On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we rip off the cover of the bullpen phone and we thrust it high into the air to chat Red Sox drama, Mets drama. We also do an awards check-in, MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, not Manager of the Year, because that's silly, stupid, and too early. Also, the first edition of Why Haven't You Homered Yet, and a Thursday version of The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with its own private jet. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we do not take the team plane.
No, I mean, we don't. Doesn't mean we take a private jet, but we definitely do not take the team plane either, as we are going to discuss the latest Juan Soto drama, manufactured or otherwise. But really, we wanted to talk about the Red Sox and Mets series that took place in Boston this week, as these two teams never fail to give us podcast fodder, and this series was no different. Honestly, we're probably going to focus a little bit more about Juan Soto, the baseball player, because I would say that that is compelling enough on its own right now, especially after how he looked against Garrett Crochet on Wednesday night. That is going to be our first topic. It is Thursday, which is a little weird. Just, you know, normally we talk Wednesdays and Fridays. We only have two shows this week. So, friends, you will get The Good, The Bad, The Ugly early this week. You're welcome. You're welcome. Also, I'm happy to do that. You know, this is not just like we're doing our audience a favor. I mean, lucky us, we get to do Good, Bad, Ugly 24 hours earlier than normal. But that's coming later. We also are going to check in on some awards. But before we do any of that, as I mentioned, we have to talk about the Red Sox and the Mets. Our opener today are these two weird baseball teams.
Drama. Drama. That's all the Red Sox do. They picked the wrong year. They were a year too early on the Netflix doc, because boy, oh boy, is there spice happening in Boston. It's seemingly every single turn. All right. What? Let's update everybody on what's going on this week.
Where to even begin? I mean, I guess we can quickly just recap the series. I mean, each game kind of gave us a little bit of a nugget. On Monday, these were all pretty low-scoring games. On Monday, the Red Sox won 3-1. We had rookie Hunter Dobbins, who's been filling in admirably. He was pretty good. Kodai Senga's been freaking awesome. He goes six innings, but does allow three runs. And the Red Sox, they win. This was a fairly normal baseball game. There wasn't really that much drama going on in this one. But on Tuesday is when stuff really starts to get interesting.
So Walker Buehler gets ejected after throwing a pitch that was in the strike zone, a pitch on which a runner was going. And so the catcher was standing and did not frame the pitch. Buehler and the umpire, who I believe was Estabrook.
Yep. Estabrook. He's an OG. We've seen him around the block. It's always is this the first ump to become a main character this season? Probably not, but this is a good one.
He hates Russell Westbrook. He's Estabrook.
Estabrook.
They meet halfway. Buehler is saying that's right down the effing middle, which it wasn't. It was on the corner. Good pitch, strike, not strike, down the middle, sure. Not even
happens
close.
All the time where this pitch, when a guy is trying to throw someone at the ceiling, does not get called. Very common and occurrence.
Because Buehler approached the umpire, the umpire ejected
him. That's where he failed.
And I think that's important to understand. I want to hop in on the ejection discourse here, okay?
Yeah.
Getting ejected does not make Walker Buehler a bad person. Right. I don't understand how you can watch this and think he shouldn't have been ejected. Like, that's okay that he got, you know what I mean? Like, did the umpire escalate the situation unnecessarily, in my opinion? Absolutely, yes. You can't walk down the mound and F-bomb the umpire. That's not a thing that you can do.
Based on Laz Diaz's, who's a crew chief, based on his description in the pool report, when they, of course, when you have ejection situations like this, the umpires have to kind of speak for themselves. He basically was like, yeah, you can yell from the mound. You can MF the umpire from the mound. But once you start approaching, that's where you go wrong. Now, it wasn't just this, you know, he's a little mad. Oh, Francisco Lindor, did he lean into a pitch at some point? You know, there were a couple moments along the way where people were not happy. But, you know, the point is that Walker Buehler, again, you get what you get here.
And what that creates, Walker Buehler is like a Zen man, right? This is not, respectfully, and I like this, out of character for Walker Buehler. Him turning things up to 11 did not shock me.
Yeah.
One other occurrence here. Did you see the video of Lindor encouraging the umpire to throw him out? So what were your thoughts on that?
This is another one. Now, Lindor addressed it after. Lindor was like, yeah, get him out of here. Get him out of here. And he's kind of like smiling and laughing. And he's like, yeah, like, because Cora gets ejected too. And we're going to get to that part in a second. Fast forward to the next day where they asked Lindor about, like, oh, do you have any animosity towards Walker Buehler? He's like, no, like, I love Walker Buehler. Like, this is great. The starting pitcher getting ejected in the third inning is great for the New York Mets. Now, as we know, the Mets end up still losing because the Red Sox bullpen becomes a meme in a way that we will get to momentarily. But Lindor was like, no, this is good. We want him to get out of the game. We want Cora to get ejected so that, you know, their temporary fill-in manager has to make all these tough decisions about the bullpen. And it didn't work out for them, but he's like, yeah, I want him out of there. And I believe Francisco Lindor 100%. Like, this is a guy, he doesn't seem like someone that had nothing personal against him. Now, I think Walker Buehler had a slightly different reaction, although did you see his quote about his tweet? Because this is, I think, one of my favorite parts of the whole story.
A quote about a tweet is almost too deep for me, so I'll let you handle that.
All right. Well, you saw Walker Buehler's tweet about this clip. So yes. Someone posted a clip and being like, oh, look, Lindor, whatever. And Walker Buehler kind of gave this a caption. It's important to note when this was posted. This was like late after the game. And Walker Buehler said, in reference to Lindor wanting Buehler to get ejected, Buehler said, quote, I wouldn't want me out there either. Sad thing is, the bullpen is full of effing animals. Tough choice. So he's like, look, man, you could throw me out, but guess what? My badass teammates are going to beat you anyway, and you're going to have to deal with that. So Walker Buehler was asked about this, and he said that this tweet was partially sponsored by Buffalo Trace.
That's
which
awesome.
Is a whiskey.
Oh, I know what it is.
And so I think he was being like, yeah, you know, I was a little bit buzzed on some whiskey after the game, and I felt like letting it fly online. So, and I don't think this is, which is great. Like, it kind of reads that way.
That's a very interesting choice for Walker Buehler there. He is a Kentuckian and therefore a man who probably knows his whiskey.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that he went and picked Buffalo Trace. I would like kind of a breakdown.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is
something that he has some sort of, was this literally just spawn con for him?
He got
to
ejected
say that?
For the purpose. This is a long con spawn con. He got ejected in order to pump Buffalo Trace.
Mm. Which is, wow. I mean, that is big brain stuff. But anyway, but then the Red Sox, okay, so now we have this weird situation where Walker Buehler's been ejected, hasn't even allowed a hit in this game. And this Red Sox bullpen, which has not been super awesome recently, now has to cover the entirety of this game. And it's like, well, this probably is not good news for the Boston Red Sox. And instead, they hold it down. They shut out the Mets with 7 pitchers, I believe tying a franchise record for most pitchers used in a shutout. And I saw this fact from the great Alex Speer on Blue Sky that the last time the Red Sox did this, who started the game? Craig Breslow in a bullpen game, which is pretty cool. But the Red Sox get this win. And along the way, something funny happens, which is that before Alex Cora got ejected, or I guess right after he got ejected, he punched the bullpen phone, at least the bullpen phone door. And this is important. First of all, of course, what a callback. Of course, David Ortiz bashing the bullpen phone in the Baltimore dugout many years ago. So this is something that Red Sox are well known to do, apparently. But Alex Cora knocked off the door of the, or at least enough off the bullpen phone to become a prop. And when the Red Sox hit a couple homers off Clay Holmes in the fifth inning, this prop appears in the dugout, first with Rob Refsnyder kind of holding it up to be dapped up as Carlos Narváez comes back in after his homer. And then after Rafael Devers goes yard, Tanner Houck is just holding it up like the Ten Commandments. He says, look at this bullpen phone door. And it just says bullpen, and it's just a very goofy image. I had there are many different interpretations as to what this means. Overthinking it is kind of the best part, because really what it is just a piece of garbage that the Red Sox thought was funny after their manager got ejected. I believe Rob Refsnyder clarified the next day that like Alex Cora was like, here, do something with this after he got ejected. So maybe Cora, you know, said, yeah, you should do this. But there are many interpretations to this. But what is your favorite one? Because I have a few.
The world of baseball has adopted and welcomed contrived and premeditated propage over the last number of years with home run celebrations. There are the Red Sox have a Wally head of their mascot, right?
Yes.
Other teams have these. Yeah, it is creepy. I love it. There are all these teams have these things that have been thought about and worked on, usually, like the Mariners trident, right?
Yeah, or we've seen like the home run jackets. We've seen the Twins do one, the Blue Jays. Yeah, these are prepared.
This is a grassroots movement. This is in the moment. This is authentic. And for that reason, I love it. I think holding it up when Carlos Narváez hits a home run off of Clay Holmes, who used to be a reliever, and it's almost saying like, go back to the bullpen, Clay Holmes.
Interesting. See, I didn't even think about that one where it's a specific Clay Holmes burn, because I was thinking about it after the Devers homer where it was like, you got to go to the bullpen. Your starter keeps giving up homers.
Right. And then like, it became our bullpen rules.
Then it became our bullpen is awesome. Now, the problem, the more problematic element is Tanner Houck being the one to hold it up. Because what has been the discourse around Tanner Houck recently?
You
might have to go back to the bullpen. So again, it's kind of a choose your own adventure prop. You can interpret this in any which way. I think thinking that the Red Sox were thinking about that as they were doing it is giving them too much
credit. No way they were thinking
about it. Clearly they were just being goofy. But it gives us, the podcasters, the opportunity to expand the world of this bullpen prop. And I look forward to seeing if it continues. The Red Sox are welcoming the Orioles to Fenway this weekend for four games. And I'm curious to see if we see it again.
They'll be seeing a lot of the Orioles bullpen. That's for dang sure. One of the things I love about props is the fact that they have to travel the prop.
And when that's the thing. This is a pretty easy one to bring around.
But it's probably like heavier and sharper and doesn't fold at all. Like some clubbies going to be charged with putting this in a bag and just like bringing it on the road. Mm-hmm. And it's just a piece of trash that these dodos will continue to carry around with them. And it makes me very happy.
At least it's not summer sausage. I mean, listen, we've seen way nastier stuff. Maybe this one is bigger and clunkier and harder to pack, but I think that they will be okay. And I do expect that we will be seeing it again in some form in the coming days. Anyway, so the Red Sox win this game.
They win this game. They end up losing on Wednesday night as Garrett Crochet is pulled relatively early after the game. Alex Cora says that the plan was always for Crochet to have a shorter start. That then led to discourse about, did you tell Crochet the bullpen was taxed? Why did you do it today? It doesn't make sense. These things are determined far in advance. I don't think this is particularly interesting.
No, I agree. And Crochet was like, right, their sentiment being, we don't want him thinking he's going a short outing and treated any differently. And I think that makes sense. And Crochet basically confirmed afterwards. I do think it is worth wondering why they didn't make a roster move before the game. That was very strange. That is just very common practice after you have a bullpen game like that. And especially if it is a predetermined plan for Crochet to not go six or seven innings, why wouldn't you want to call up an extra arm? Anyway, the point is the Mets managed to squeak out this series finale. And once again, we just have a strange result where both teams are kind of coming out of the series feeling all kinds of different ways where, you know, no one got swept, but the Red Sox still can't get far away from 500 whatsoever. And the Mets are still kind of not in an awesome place offensively is we flip it to the Mets now and we can focus on Juan Soto. The other notable thing going into this game was the lineup changed for the first time all season. Carlos Mendoza spoke about how they wanted to mix things up a little bit. I believe the Mets had gone 7 consecutive games scoring 3 runs or fewer and facing a tough lefty like Crochet. They were like, oh, well, we'll add another righty to the top. Now, Starling Marte being the best answer in the 2-hole, we can debate that. I doubt that will be a long-term thing, but you know, they move Soto back to third and Pete back to fourth. It was something, right? You know, most managers will say, no, we are not going to change. We're not going to change. We're not going to change. Mendoza was like, we'll try something different. Was this an offensive explosion on Wednesday night? No, it was not. But they did end up scoring enough runs to win. Of course, it was more of a credit to the Mets pitching. Francisco Lindor hits a home run late, which I believe was the Mets' first home run in like a week. So that also kind of spoke to their offensive struggles. But I know Juan Soto and how he's looked. We sort of talked about that after the Subway Series. But last night, he looked particularly flummoxed by Mr. Crochet. The generous interpretation is that it's the first time he had faced Garrett Crochet in his career. And I have to imagine that is like not super fun. At the same time, it's Juan Soto, and you still expect him to look his best against the best, and he did not.
I think generally you and I try to downplay the reactionary narratives that often get blabbered about on talk radio, right? Where it's like, this guy's washed. He's a bum. They should send Trent Grisham to The Hague and Aaron Judge doesn't want it bad enough. Like 99% of the time, we're like, that's stupid. I think genuinely that Juan Soto right now is off. Something is wrong. Something is different. I also completely believe that he will be okay, that he will figure it out, that he will get out of whatever is going on right now. He is not going to be a miserable, passive hitter for the next 15 seasons. That is not happening. Okay.
No.
We have all of us as a world have watched too much good Juan Soto to genuinely believe that he's not going to get out of the funk. But in order to believe that, the first step is what? Acceptance. Okay.
Now,
acceptance.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look right. It doesn't look right. I mean, he's not shuffling. Yeah. Right? Not shuffling.
Well, he had a one walk later last night, but he's not drawing as many walks. He's not taking as many pitches. He's not taking as many close pitches. This third strikeout against Garrett Crochet, he's chasing more than you would really ever see him chase.
He takes two fastballs in the zone for the first two strikeouts looking.
Right. And so it's just moments like that. It doesn't mean he's doomed, but it's fair to say that's not what it normally looks like, because I think that's accurate. Now, you can say you fast forward to his at-bat later and he smacks a deep fly ball to left center that he probably thinks he got, right? He had one earlier in the series where he thought he got it over the Green Monster and it ends up only being a single and he looks kind of silly. And then that reignites the hustle discourse. Why aren't you on second? All these things. That too, where it's like, not the hustle part. I'm moving that to the side. But where Juan Soto thought he homered and he didn't, like that is also notable. Because he knows what it feels like. He knows what it's like to go oppo. He's done it over the Monster. He's done these things before. And so for him to like miscalculate, even the sack fly last night, he kind of paused and felt like he thought he got it and he didn't. Still a good swing, produced a run. But it's those things when you're held to the highest possible standard, which is fair when you have set that standard and you're the highest paid player in the history of the sport. That's fine. That's part of it. It doesn't mean we treat him unfairly. It means we treat him like he's the highest paid player in the sport. I think that's okay. But also, there's still so much going on, whether it's underlying stuff. Now, yeah, the last couple of nights, it hasn't been great. I guess he hasn't homered in a little while here. But for the most part, he's still getting on base more than most players. And so it's prolonged. It's the same thing we say about Judge. When he's bad for 4 or 5 games in a row, you're like, what's going on? Right. When your standard is that you're doing something awesome at least once or twice a week, if you go a week without doing something awesome, we start to be like, oh, something's up with him.
Also, the plane stuff, just a hilarious level of irresponsible conjecture by a number of people in the media. Like there, I think Carl Ravitch on the broadcast said something along the lines of his family has their own travel arranged through the Mets, which I don't think includes a jet. And somehow that is snowballed into Juan Soto doesn't travel with the team on the road. And just like the logistical hilarity of that, if you've spent any time around a baseball team, they would way rather travel together. That's the whole fun of it. I remember in college, there was like game where I went home for Passover and like had to meet the team somewhere. And it was like the worst thing ever that I missed a bus ride.
Oh,
like
that's, of course.
That's the point. And Juan Soto, even though he's good and rich, feels that too.
It's a great example of just a stupid news cycle where it's like, before you be like, oh my God, Juan Soto, think about it for 3 seconds. Does it make any sense? You probably will be able to move past it as something, as a reality. Last thing on Soto that I'll just say, because again, it's like, I always wonder, if you pull up his Savant page, you're like, nothing's wrong. He's 99th percentile ex-Wobo. He's 99th percentile hit, hard hit rate, whatever. We talk about the standards. His last 10 games, he is 5-for-35 with all singles and, you know, 12 strikeouts, 9 walks. Now, before that, he in Arizona against the Cubs, he had 2-homer game in Arizona. He had a homer. But since those 3 homers in 2 games on May 7th and May 9th, 5-for-35, no extra base hits. That's not very good. Again, it's 10 games. Most players go 10 games without an extra base hit, and they're fine. No one cares. When you're Juan Soto, you get held to a different standard. And I think that part is totally okay. If we can focus on the production on the field, that is okay.
He's pretty good.
He's pretty good. I'm not worried about that. Last thing on this series before we take a break. We have to bring this up. We had a funny conversation about Steve Cohen's tweets. Let's rewind to April 23rd. The Mets sweep the Phillies. Vibes are good. They're 18-7. They're 5 games up in first place. The Phillies. Oh my God. We're giving up walk-off singles to Starling Marte. This is terrible. And we laughed at a tweet from Mets owner Steve Cohen, who said right after that, quote, we need to keep riding this wave. There will be mean reversion.
Mean at some point. Reversion.
But there is something special happening at Citi Field. So much fun. So again, this is Steve Cohen, ever the realist, saying, guys, this team is special. We're having a great time. But don't get too excited because we will be humbled soon. The regression is coming. And not only was he correct, he was correct immediately. Since that tweet, the Mets have gone 12-13 and they are no longer in first place. Meanwhile, really, perhaps the regression he was referring to is the Phillies playing really well, because they are 18-6 since getting swept by the Mets, and they are now in first place. And after the Mets lost on Tuesday, I love that Steve Cohen decided to provide the other end of the spectrum here, saying, quote, welcome to the ups and downs of a baseball season. This too will pass, LGM. So good. So good. So good. So good. So good. Because this too will pass is almost like a reference to his previous tweet where he's like, remember how good we were feeling? That was not going to last. Think about how crappy you're feeling right now. That won't last either. It's a long season, folks.
Dude.
LGM. Steve Cohen.
Steve Cohen made bagillions of dollars because he was probably not reactionary to various short-term forces in the stock market, right?
Steve Cohen, not a believer in the it's so over, we're so back mentality.
For he's like, guys. Steve Cohen, it just it's neither over nor back. It always just is on a slight incline.
Yep. But he did. So remember, something special is happening at Citi Field. So I still believe that. And as I think you pointed out when we were talking about this yesterday, Mets still have quite the home record, but we will see how that shows this weekend as they welcome the Los Angeles Dodgers. All right, let's take a break, Jake. When we return, let's talk about some awards. It's almost June, and let's just give out some awards because we want to. It's our podcast. We'll be right back on Baseball Podcast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It's May 22nd. let's talk about awards.
That's right. The season is over, and we are now going to tell you who has won the MVP, the Cy Young, the Rookie of the Year, and Manager of the Year. Are we really going to talk about that? Maybe a little bit.
Sure.
Just to be clear, this is if the season is over right now, right? We're not projecting. We're not saying, ah, this guy's. This is just so far.
There will be some circumstances where Jake Mintz will say, I would vote for this guy right now, but I think this guy will pass that guy.
Take the lead. Take us through these awards, my friend.
Most valuable player is the award handed to the most valuable player.
Got it.
They do it in the American League, and they do a separate one in the National League.
Weird.
In the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. American League MVP for both of us is going to be Aaron Judge, I would guess.
Yeah, not going to waste time talking about that because we have other things to talk about. So who's your runner-up right now? Is Bobby Witt in position to remain in second place?
Forever.
He's currently, yeah, I mean, this might just be where he is for a long time. He's currently tied with Cal Raleigh for second among American League position players. Still like a win and a half behind Aaron Judge, but I think it's still Bobby Witt, but I mean, Cal Raleigh's pretty freaking awesome, and I think Cal Raleigh kind of has to be in the top. I mean, other candidates here include Alex Bregman, who's, you know, had a little cooled off a little bit. I love the idea that Rafael Devers could hit his way into this conversation amidst the discourse, but that seems somewhat far-fetched. Who else is on your ballot here so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's Judge, Gap the size of the Grand Canyon, Cal Raleigh, Bobby Witt Jr., Alex Bregman, and then everybody else.
I think right now I actually go Bregman over Bobby Witt. Bobby Witt's only got 5 home runs.
Scrub.
And his stolen bases, something we've talked about a lot with him, can be become a little bit more efficient stealing bases. He has 16 steals. The rate isn't that much better. Again, the defense is still marvelous. He's still a good hitter. He's still their only like awesome player, but I think Bregman just feels like a huge difference. So I think I'd go Bregman second and I'd go Cal Raleigh third.
As uninteresting as the top of the ballot is in the American League, I think it is fascinating in the National League.
All right.
Right now, I would put Freddie Freeman at number one.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I think he was pretty comfortably in for me. Now, he's played about 10 fewer games than all these other guys, which is part of this. I kind of want to pick Freddie also because he was my pick last year, and I would love to be rewarded for the belief in him a year late. Again, our war leaders include, of course, Pete Carmstrong, we've mentioned. Corbin Carroll's up there. We also always have the situation where you have teammates, and it's like, okay, well, Corbin Carroll is tied with Geraldo Perdomo, who's been absolutely unbelievable. And Freddie Freeman's still behind Shohei Ohtani. Okay. So has Shohei Ohtani been noticeably worse than last year? Not really. Not really. And I think he has not.
I believe he has not stolen a base in a while. Oh, I guess he stole one this week, but like it had been a while and he only quote has 11.
Yeah. I'm going to be boring and keep Shohei at one here. I think between my second and third, again, Freeman, it's just because he's 10 games behind everybody else, but he could be there. I think Carroll and Tatis feel like, I mean, both of the way that Carroll's playing right now just feels like what we were watching, an even better version of what we were watching as a rookie. So I think Carroll would have to be in my top three somewhere. And then, in fact, I'll put Carroll third, and then third is, or put Carroll second, and then third for me is probably between Tatis and Freeman.
I would do opposite,
you know, fourth or fifth. Okay.
Of you, I would do Freeman, Carroll, Ohtani.
Okay. Lindor, right there. Let's move to the Cy Young Awards. Let's talk about some pitchers. This is also a fun one. A lot of good candidates. Let's go back to the American League, where Tarek Skubal is kind of doing everything you could hope Tarek Skubal would be doing as he goes for his second straight Cy Young. But is he your answer right now?
Yeah. I mean,
there's real competition here. In fact, his ERA is higher than almost, I don't know, 5, 6, 7. I'm not even sure if it's in the top 5 or 6 right now. Again, so we're talking about 10, 11 starts. But yeah.
this is the difference between if I'm voting now and what I think is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, I think over, like, Max Fried, who is my number one pick right now, who has a 1-2-9, is not going to carry a 1-2-9 for the rest of the year. Now, he is someone who is always outperforming his peripherals because of the way he pitches, but he's not going to have a 1-2-9. People don't have 1-2-9s. I think when the dust settles, it will be Mr. Tarek Skubal at the top of the pile. I would put Skubal one when it's all said and done. But right now, I would go Fried. I would go Hunter Brown. Mm. Then Skubal. Then Eovaldi.
Mm. Okay. I mean, Crochet is pretty easily in the top three for me. I think right now I would go Crochet, Skubal, Fried. Brown is close in third.
So the reason I'm in on Fried over a different high strikeout guy is because it's not a fluke for Fried, if this makes sense.
This is what he does.
Like, he does this. Like, the way he gets outs is not the way that Garrett Crochet gets outs, right? If Max Fried had a history of striking out a ton of dudes and was outperforming his ERA with a 1-2-9, I'd be like, well, he doesn't deserve it. But I would say that it is, quote, deserved. Max Fried getting soft contact makes sense to me.
Yeah. And then, right, I mean, we have, okay, Bubich has been awesome. Got to mention him because he was on the podcast. Jacob deGrom has, I mean, he's who I pick on the end of the year. He's got a 2-3-3, and he's started to look like himself in recent weeks. So in terms of projecting forward, but from a workload standpoint, Skubal's the best bet. Eovaldi's also, and Fried generally have been pretty good bets.
And Fried.
We don't know where Crochet's innings are going to end up, right?
That's the thing.
And the plan, the hope is for it to be 200, but that's kind of where the variance comes in with that one.
And that's the thing I care the most about when it comes, all things being equal. Like, I'm not going to vote for Jordan Lyles, but I care about innings. And let's flip to the National League where my order goes Zach Wheeler, number one.
Okay.
Yoshinobu Yamamoto, number two. And probably would go Jesus Luzardo number three over Paul Skeens right now.
Yeah, I think Skeens is fourth for me also. I'm going Yamamoto. I mean, it's coming off the one that he just said. This is partially projecting forward and partially what I've seen. He is just, I'm really excited to hopefully get to watch him in person in Cleveland next week. I believe it would line up that way. Man, I mean, when he's, not that this is new, because he had runs like this last year. We saw it in the postseason at times. His command is some of the most fun to just watch work of any pitcher I've seen in a long time. The way that he can just locate the fastball and the curveball too, which is like a fun pitch to kind of have perfect command of, land that for strikes, not just like a get me over, okay, here's a surprise 0-1, like to land the curveball on the side, you know, the different quadrants is so impressive. So, Visually, I would say Yamamoto feels like the best pitcher in the league so far this year. So I'd go him, Wheeler, Logan Webb's right there once again leading it in innings, but he still feels a tad behind. It doesn't feel like he's leveled up in any sort of meaningful way as good as the stats are. So I think I'd go Yamamoto, Wheeler, Luzardo.
Here's why I would go Wheeler. He has leveled up somehow. Somehow. As a 35-year-old, he has a career-high strikeout rate and a career-low walk rate.
Yeah. No, Wheeler is incredible. I got no beef with that.
It's another level of Wheeler, right? Yeah. That's why I'm like, and okay, he's the best pitcher of our generation now, not to win a Cy Young, now that Sale got his.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I want to see a world where Zach Wheeler gets it, in part because he's not getting into the Hall of Fame, right? Like it started too late for him.
Probably not. But again, I don't want to make any sort of big declarations about how starting pitchers are going to be evaluated, because it's just going to be a completely different conversation by the time those guys are on the ballot. Let's go to the rookies, American League rookies. So, I mean, we have to mention that, like, Jacob Wilson is top 10 in F4 among all American League position players, I believe.
What a freak.
He was my pick coming into the year. He of the 5% walk rate, 5% strikeout rate, 341. I love it. 341 BABIP, 341 batting average. It's so perfect. perfect. I love that. Jacob Wilson is one of a kind. He's basically been everything you could possibly hope for as a solid shortstop who has 80 grade contact ability and a little bit more power than I expected. So I don't really see another reasonable candidate right now. For as much as I love Chase Mydroth, as much as I appreciate Carlos Narvaez, what a pickup he has been for Boston. There's not really a pitcher, right? Christian Campbell has fallen off pretty hard. He was the American League Rookie of the Month in April, and he's been very bad in May. Shane Smith, I've mentioned, as the White Sox All-Star. If we're going on the mound, I think Shane Smith would be number two for me, but he's still behind Jacob Wilson.
I would go Jacob Wilson, Carlos Narvaez, Shane Smith. Narvaez is, I know that we don't talk about an MVP in the Rookie of the Year conversation, like what is the V? But for the Red Sox, who, God, they needed a catcher.
Yes. And they thought they traded it away, right? We thought, oh no, well, they got rid of Kyle Teal. Who's it going to be? And Narvaez, who they got from the Yankees in a minor trade this offseason. He's awesome. I talked to him for the Giolito story I wrote. I'm super impressed with him. He's legit.
I would, however, I think Jason Dominguez will win this. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I know he had a walk-off homer last night, so it's fresh in the mind. I think we haven't seen Dominguez catch fire yet. And I
you think he's going to win?
Coming. I do.
You think? Okay, wow.
I do.
All right.
I would not pick him in my top three right now, but I think it's coming.
Okay.
He is hitting the snot out of the ball when he hits it. Yep. The whiff rate and the strikeout rate are way too high for me. Yep. It is easy to forget how little baseball Jason Dominguez has played, relatively, right?
Sure.
His first two seasons in the big leagues, which were both marred by injury, he appeared in 26 total games. He has only played in 40 games so far this year. He is a baby. He is a baby. And I think that the more experience he gets, all the things that excited us about Jason Dominguez still exist.
Sure.
Right? His trajectory to here has just been so bizarre.
Yeah.
I am all in. I'm a believer.
The two other rookies I just want to mention in the American League are, so Cam Smith, in terms of like guys we were thinking like could be in this mix, Cam Smith's been actually decent. I mean, he hasn't been incredible, but he has started to, first few weeks it was like, uh-oh, this is maybe not the best idea. He's been about a league average hitter. You know, Jackson Jobe has had some flashes, but he doesn't really look like a frontline guy at this point. The one I wanted to mention, okay, first of all, Sugano. Sugano hilarious. Might throw 160 innings with a 3 ERA and we'll see where he ends up on ballots. That's a funny one. He's 35 years old. That
he would be the oldest rookie of the year ever.
I looked. Sounds about right.
Recently.
But the one other guy I wanted to mention is Will Warren. Just because he's doing a version of what Luis Gil did last year, where now Luis Gil's ERA was sparkling for the first few months, but it was a lot of strikeouts and a lot of walks, but he's got good stuff. And if he ends up making 20-25 starts for the Yankees and strikes out a bunch of guys, like he could factor into the conversation as well. National League rookies. This one is a little bit more open. Where are you leaning here?
I'm not leaning Roky Sasaki.
This is Drake Baldwin for me. I adore Drake Baldwin. I think how the Braves continue to find him, like a way for him to get into the lineup, will be very interesting. Again, it's only 90 plate appearances, but my God, is he crushing the ball. Some interesting pitching candidates, not necessarily the most famous guys in the world, you know, the Chad Patricks of the world. But, you know, he's been solid. He's got a 3-2-3 in 10 starts. Kasperius was looking pretty good for the Dodgers. Smith Shauver is certainly one to watch as if he continues to remain in the Braves rotation moving forward. If he gets to 20 or so starts, that's someone with kind of prospect pedigree that could get some push if he's doing it for a Braves team that's, you know, in a playoff push. Anyone else stand out in the National League?
I
love
would
the Marlins
go...
catchers. Love Liam Hicks. Love Agustin Ramirez, man. Dude, Ramirez is so much fun.
Ramirez is awesome. He cannot catch, though.
I know. He can't, but I don't care. I want them both to be in the lineup because they've both been hitting. Liam Hicks got a 129 WRC plus.
I would say Ha-Sung Kim
Yeah.
is
keep an eye on
him. He's not who I'd pick right now, but because he just hasn't played enough. But I'm very, what a fun player, huh?
Yeah. I would also, Dylan Cruz getting hurt makes it harder. I know his numbers right now are not good, but that's still one in a version of Dominguez where if he was healthy, he's going to be playing more than basically all these other rookies. And so you can imagine him getting to enough counting stats, but he's in a pretty deep hole in terms of the stat line.
Do you know who you picked? Do you remember who you picked for AL and NL Rookie of the Year at the beginning of the year?
I picked Jacob Wilson for sure.
You picked Jacob Wilson?
Who did I pick in the NL? I probably haven't even mentioned him yet.
He has not played in the major leagues. Bubba Chandler.
Oh, Bubba Chandler. Honestly, I still feel fine about that because Bubba Chandler should have been in the big leagues 3 weeks ago. Should we use this as an unfortunate transition to the bit of news we also need to talk about before we take a break?
Do it right now.
Jared Jones got elbow surgery. This is something we kind of expected for a while, because normally when young hard throwing pitcher has elbow pain, that usually leads to surgery. They decided to give it some rest and see if it got better, and it didn't get better, and he got elbow surgery. It is notable that in Jared Jones's post on Instagram, he clarified, which I appreciate because the team refused to, that this was an internal brace repair. And that is an important distinction because, as a reminder, this is a newer version of elbow surgery, which we have seen guys like Spencer Strider and Lucas Giolito and a couple others recently undergo, which is different than a full Tommy John reconstruction, which in theory and in practice in some cases allows for a quicker return to the mound. Now, doesn't mean Jared Jones pitching in 2025. Doesn't guarantee he is going to pitch in 2026, especially because of how kind of late into the season that he got the surgery. But it is now more plausible that we could see him pitching again at some point next year. Whereas if it was full Tommy John, it would have been a little bit harder to imagine him pitching even next season. So that's, I guess, good news, but still a little bit. I mean, it's a bummer because Jared Jones is a lot of fun to watch. That said, I bring that up after Bubba Chandler because I think Bubba Chandler is going to be better than Jared Jones was last year. And Jared Jones was really good. And I think what Bubba Chandler is, I mean, he's the top pitching prospect in baseball right now. And I think, you know, Andrew Painter might have something to say about that. But I think Bubba Chandler is special. And I think, you know, it's not going to save the Pirates because they can't score. But he is going to be appointment viewing. And I expect him to be called up in the next few weeks.
Let's take a break.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about manager of the year. I'm not. We're not. It's just not. We're not going to do that.
You're my manager of the year, Jordan.
Thanks, buddy. We're going to take a break, and when we return, the good, the bad, the ugly, and, oh man, our first edition of Why Haven't You Homered Yet. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It is now time for one of our favorite segments. For the first time this year, I am going to ask some Major League Baseball players, why haven't you homered yet? This is a segment where I pull up on Baseball Reference Stathead, sort most plate appearances with zero home runs, and I ask these players, what is taking so long? And Jake has to improv in their place, explain why these players do not have a home run yet. Now, you know, for the first month, we certainly had some interesting candidates. And even in the last week, we have seen some guys get off the board, right? Royce Lewis only just hit his first home run. Now he was injured. So that's an easy one. Patrick Bailey last night had gone, I believe, 140 or so plate appearances. He finally hit his first home run. So we've started to see some first homers in the season. But listen, we still have a pretty good list of guys that have not homered yet, and I'm going to ask them that difficult question. So let us begin, Jake. We go to the south side. Just kidding. The north side of Chicago.
You got turned around?
Got turned around. Not only did I get turned around, I got Justin turned around. Justin Turner. Why haven't you homered yet? 84 plate appearances. You're supposed to be kind of lifting up this Cubs lineup. Not that they need it, but they brought you in to make an offensive impact, and you have not hit the ball over the fence yet. Justin Turner, why haven't you homered yet?
Leadership.
Okay. It's not, leadership does not involve home runs.
Well, every person, every soul has a limited amount of energy to go around. Mm-hmm. And I, Justin Turner, am utilizing all that energy to lead a great group of guys. And so far, that strategy has worked wonders for us, mm-hmm. the Chicago Cubs. We rake. I don't need to do that.
No, you don't. You really don't. You're hitting 203 with two doubles, let alone zero home runs. But the leadership is intact. Now, let's go to the South side, where I ask you, Edgar Caro, top catching prospect for the Chicago White Sox, who has come to the plate 99 times and has yet to hit a home run. Why haven't you homered yet?
Because catching is a tertiary position group.
Tell me what that means.
There are hitters, there are pitchers, and there are catchers. I'm a catcher. As long as I frame the baseball, whisper sweet nothings into the pitching staff's ear, and do my homework in terms of game planning, I don't need to hit home runs. Austin Hedges made $75 million and he could use a tennis racket. What do I need to do?
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's go to Kansas City and ask Hunter Renfro in year two of a major league deal to boost the Royals outfield. You have come to the plate 108 times this season, and not once have you hit the ball over the fence. Why haven't you homered yet, Hunter?
I'm not in the mood.
Okay, well, minus 1.5 WAR for you, Hunter Renfro. If you had a homer, I imagine that would be at least minus 1.4. Let's go.
It's probably a hat tip to my doppelganger, Mike Trout.
Oh,
where it's like, he can't, then I won't.
Now we're talking. All right, just a few more here. Let's go to Atlanta. Another surprising inclusion in the Braves outfield. It took some unfortunate events for this to happen. Alex Verdugo, 118 plate appearances into your surprising Braves tenure, and you have not hit a home run yet. Why not?
Because that fence in right field's so far away.
So high.
It's so high and far away. I got used to Yankee Stadium. It was right there. Yeah. I could smell the W.B. Mason sign.
Yep.
Practically.
Yep.
And now the sizzling porterhouses and T-bones from the chop house are eons away from the batter's box.
That's true. It probably is a little intimidating. I think that's fair. All right, we'll do two more, and we'll save some of these other ones for later in the season if they still haven't homered yet. The New York Mets have a player who is very fun to watch, but he still has zero home runs. His name is Luis Angel Acuña. Luis Angel, you hit some big home runs when you first came up last year, and I thought you were going to be this big power hitter like your brother. What's going on? Why haven't you homered yet?
I'm waiting for him.
Oh, that's so nice. That's so nice. You're waiting for the first game against Ronald?
I'm waiting for Ronald to come back. Okay. I can't do it without. I couldn't have gotten here without him. So I must wait for him to homer. Who hits a home run first this year in the major leagues, Ronald or Luis Angel?
I think Ronald is an easy pick. We will see. I mean, Luis Angel's running out of time here. All right, let's just go straight to, you know what? I'm not even going to go to the top. There are two players who are at the very, very, very top. There are 40 plate appearances ahead of everybody else.
And I know
you probably know who one of them is. But the other one, I don't think you know who it is, and I am going to do it because he just passed. He just took the lead. It is another Chicago Cub. It is Nico Hoerner.
That is the one I know.
That is the one you know. Okay, well, you have to answer for Nico Hoerner. We're at 196 plate appearances, the MLB leader without any homers. Nico, come on, man. We can't get one into the basket out there in Wrigley?
PCA took them all. He took them all.
He did.
I had all these homers you were in my locker. Well,
you didn't have that many, but you had more than zero.
I had these homers in my locker. Yeah. And, you know, Pope Crow Armstrong took them.
It would have been a funny, right? Like, what would have been the over under for combined home runs, Nico Hoerner and PCA for the season? You know, it would have been a fun one. Or even at this point in the year, like, if you had said 12 between the two of them at this point, you would have
been like, hell yeah.
No, you would have taken the under, I think.
No, I'm saying Cubs are like, great.
Right. No, that's a great answer. All right. Well, I'll leave some of these other non-home run hitters. They can stay. I'll give them a little bit more time. There's some other interesting names on here, but I'm gonna spare them for now. Jake, thank you for speaking on behalf of these non-sluggers. I appreciate it. All right. It's time. We have made it to the end of our Thursday show. It's time for the good, the bad, the ugly. Something good, something bad, something ugly from the week. Why don't you start us off?
Most teams now, not the Rockies probably, but most teams now have Twitter accounts for their minor league systems. And they are, you know, like at Young Bucks for Pirates prospects. I believe it's like O's Player Development has a Twitter.
Like more than half the teams have these accounts now. It's great, just like, by the way, super useful resource, but also like total propaganda.
Propaganda like and great. Because it's great. It'll be like, oh, wow, he hit the ball 117. Like, I'm glad I know that, right? Oh, I didn't know that guy was that tall, whatever. But usually they are used to highlight the exploits, accomplishments, and futures of some of the sport's youngest people.
Mm-hmm.
This week at KC Royals PD, the official player development account of the Kansas City Royals, tweeted the following: dealing in the desert, 45-year-old Rich Hill retires all 12 batters he faces, striking out 7 in his Royals organizational debut. Every single ACL Cubs hitter he faced was not born when Hill was drafted by Chicago in 2002.
Great work. Incredible. I think the funniest part about this is, I mean, I guess it would be true no matter what the account was called, but like, thinking about Rich Hill in the context of Royals player development, like the idea there are people in Surprise who are like working on their like player plan for Rich Hill. Like, all right, Rich, here's what we're going to want you to work on here. We're just going to focus on sliders in this outing against these children.
The name of the account, like the handle is at KC Royals PD, but the name of the account is Raising Royals. Like the implication that they're like helping them along. Hey. My guy, Rich Hill's raised. he's been raised, man.
He's
raising
children. He's not raising Royals. I mean, my goodness. Now, again, this is a good sign. Presumably, he'll now go to, you know what? They should make him do every stop. They should make him go. Don't just send him straight to AAA. Make him earn it. We can't rush this development. Okay, this is a top prospect on our hands. You got to be careful with what you're working with.
I'm thinking of the catcher for the Arizona Complex League Royals who caught Rich Hill, who's probably used to like recently drafted high schoolers and Latin American prospects throwing like 99 with absolutely zero control.
Right. This is a way
better
assignment.
And here comes Rich Hill and it's just like, boop, boop.
Yeah. It's like, oof, this is a nice little breather. But yeah, I mean, that stat there is so good. All right. Well, that is a great. I love that. That is very good. I agree. My good is also a top prospect. It's Jostensen Garcia. This is a player we have not talked
about. Jostensen.
No, I'm giving you the correct pronunciation.
Jostensen. Yes.
Okay. Don't tell me. Okay. I did my research for that. I wasn't going to come on with this name with Mr. Password himself and say it wrong, okay? I have video of him saying his name, and I am very excited to talk about him because Jostensen Garcia is a prospect in the Red Sox organization who has reached AAA and just hit his first AAA home run. And amidst the Big Three, formerly Big Four with Kyle Teal, Christian Kale, Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony. When are those guys going to come to the big leagues? Here's Jostinson Garcia. Yes, folks, it is spelled J-H-O-S-T-Y-N-X-O-N. His nickname is the password because it is not a name or combination of letters that you would ever guess. Is kind of raking, and I don't know where he fits in the Red Sox outfield, but I hope we get him because he's got this kind of a great look. He's got this very long hair that's like very kind of straight, very straight long hair. And he's just like a really, really cool looking dude with a cool looking swing. And he's got big pop. And again, I have no clue where he fits in the Red Sox plans. But either he is going to get traded to a team that absolutely loves having the password, or he will find his way into the Red Sox plans. And now that he's in AAA, I figured I should put him on the radar as good.
That is good. It's also a good password.
It is. How many Red Sox fans are using that as a password now? That's a good question.
That's a great point. I would probably say bad. That's bad. Using it as your password now.
Using the password as your password?
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of bad, what's bad?
This is probably the last year for MLB on ESPN. In its current format. Oh, we got a report yesterday that NBC is interested. Oh. This is according to Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. That NBC Universal is going to make an offer. The overwhelming assumption at this point is that professional baseball on ESPN is going goodbye, right? At the end of the year. The reason that's bad in this context is we may never again hear bum, ba-da-bum, ba-da.
Oh man, now you're breaking my heart. I'm already dealing with, you know, saying goodbye to Around the Horn, and now I'm having to think that I'm never going to hear that sound again. Are you kidding me?
So the reason this came to my mind is because when I heard that MLB could go back to NBC, where it was for a long time, it had the World Series for like 35, 40 years. I was like, wait, was there like a round ball rock for baseball? Was there like an absolute banger of an intro song for baseball on NBC? And I went back this morning and I looked at a bunch of intros to World Series. And the answer is no. There were a bunch of similar but different mediocre tunes that led in, all of which were definitively worse and less memorable than bum, ba-da-bum, ba-da. I'm Joe Morgan and this is John Miller. And oh
man, that's a great point. I guess bad. We're gonna have to start reckoning with that. There's probably a few things about the has not quite gathered the same level of fond farewell as, you know, basketball on TNT. It's definitely a change.
John Tesh, who wrote Roundball Rock on the horn.
Yeah. Does he know baseball? Who knows?
As a cycling enthusiast who already uses the peacock quite a bit, this is not the worst case scenario for me.
All right. My bad this week. Is Jose Iglesias? No, not that Jose Iglesias has a 573 OPS with zero home runs, I should add. That is bad. But
that's also predicted. You think, like.
Yes, right. Last weekend, Jose Iglesias was seen with a Padres colored OMG sign. Now, this is troubling for a few reasons, Jake. You've written very well about how the Mets, of course, with Jose Iglesias no longer around, were moving past. We are no longer watching the OMG Mets. We are watching a different Mets. Every year is different. And that's true. Now, since this image posted by Annie Heilbrunn, one of the, I believe, TV reporters in San Diego, friend of the pod, she follows us. And he posted this picture of Jose Iglesias. This is like during pregame workouts against the Mariners. And Jose Iglesias is just holding up this OMG sign. And then you see someone else like hold it and then walks off with it. I don't think we've seen it since then. But just that image, the premise that Iglesias is contemplating running this back is
he's running again. He's running.
And I would like to say that it is possible that the karma here has already struck. As since this image, the Padres have only lost. They have lost five in a row and have scored three total runs. They got swept by the Mariners at home. They went to Toronto on Tuesday, lost 3-0. Last night, lost 14-0. And I don't know, man. This is a situation where it's like, we're not doing this again. If Condoleezza wants to continue his pop career, that's awesome.
Yep.
Keep it going. If you want to release a new song that the Padres can rally around, that's also great. I have no problem with that. But even a hint of this, whether it was already squashed and said, hey, we're not doing this, that's bad. That's a bad read. That's bad feel.
The Padres played one of the worst defensive baseball games I can remember last night. Just butterfingers all over the place.
How else do you allow 14 runs to the Blue Jays, who hadn't even scored 10 once this season?
There you go. I just think, like, Iglesias probably owns the rights to OMG. Obviously, it's his song, right?
Yeah, sure.
But gotta let it die, man. These are not the OMG Padres.
No. Like I said,
Here's the thing. Yeah, if you want to release a song called LOLJK or ROTFL, you know?
Right now, I think the song would be called Uh-Oh. But there's a lot of different ways you could go with this.
FML.
But it can't...
STFU.
Can't be OMG. How about if you want to do a duet with Jorge Alfaro and do, you know, LFG? I know we had LFGM, but LFGSD, go for it.
Sure.
That's fine.
Find a new slant.
OMG, move on. It doesn't take any away from the song. It's just it can't be part of the Padres. So anyway, Padres also bad. I mean, this is an incredibly bad run of baseball over last week or so, but we'll see. All right, Ugla.
It wouldn't be an episode of Baseball Barbecast if we didn't talk about the new Pope, baby.
Oh, we got more Pope stuff. All right, let's do it. What you got?
Jake Berger on the Texas Rangers not playing well, and he got sent down to the trips and called back up. And since then, he's been living by a new mantra, quote, new Pope, new me. Jake Berger, I believe, is Catholic. I should double check that. I believe he's Catholic.
Well,
yes,
right.
He is Catholic.
Yes.
Berger,
yes.
Who is a Catholic, has been, upon hitting homers and doubles, doing the sign of the cross, which for the members of the tribe out there, is, you know, you've seen it in American society. It's like two lines. One of them is longer than the other, and they intersect.
That's what a cross is.
Yep. So the cross is, and he's doing the cross. Is this insensitive to do after like a eighth inning double off a mediocre reliever? I don't know. Berger, his Catholic, so he gets to run the show, not me. He said, quote, he's a Midwestern guy like me. I was proud. Since he's been elected Pope, we've been rather hot. He told the Dallas Morning News. That's great, man.
Yeah, in terms of the insensitivity, I was wondering that about like people dressing up as the Pope and going to the Cubs White Sox games. Like, I don't know. I'm not going to speak to that. That's not our lane. But we do keep talking about the Pope on this baseball podcast. But
this is great.
Jake Berger's given us a reason to.
It's just the most. It's just the most the Pope has ever cared about baseball. It's the most. If we're going like a chart. Right, on one axis it's how famous are you in the world, and on the other axis it's how much do you care about baseball. This Pope is the he's the furthest to the right and the top. Yeah.
Of course.
Ever of any person.
Yeah. I it's awesome. Brings me a lot of joy. New Pope, new me too. I mean, again,
same
for
me.
Different reasons.
Same me.
Okay, same.
Same me.
We just talk about the Pope in the pod now, which we didn't do. Previously.
New Pope, same
Jake. That's definitely new.
That's new. We were doing that.
I feel pretty confident saying that Pope Francis literally did not come up once in any iteration of any of our podcasts over the past decade. I feel pretty good saying that.
Yeah.
But Jake will now try to prove me wrong. All right, my Ugla. Hey, I mean, this Rich Hill story is great. But you know what's even better? Fernando Rodney. This is something that I believe we referenced when it happened over the offseason, which is that Fernando Rodney signed to play in the Intercounty Baseball League in Canada. And this past week, he made his debut for the Hamilton Cardinals. And Jason Beck of MLB.com, Tigers beat writer who used to cover Fernando Rodney earlier in his career, went and watched Fernando Rodney pitch in the Intercounty Baseball League. And this story that Jason wrote is just delightful, which is why this could also fall into good. But again, it's so ugly that Fernando Rodney, who is 40 older than Rich Hill. How old is Fernando Rodney? He is
48, I believe.
48. Turned 48 in March. This quote is the whole thing. This story explains how the Hamilton Cardinals decided to, got the idea to sign Fernando Rodney, and I'm not going to spoil the whole thing, but this sums it up right here. This is what Rodney said about the Hamilton Cardinals approaching him to pitch. Quote, "I don't know how they find me, but they find me. And I said, yes, let's go." Further, Rodney continues, "It's not about money. It's about fun. It's like my hobby now. I like fishing, playing dominoes, playing baseball." So here he is, pitching still at age 48 for the Hamilton Cardinals. He did allow a couple runs. He vultured the win in his first outing where he gave up four runs and the team ended up coming back and winning. Gave up another run in his next outing. But that changeup's still cooking. And I expect Fernando Rodney, as he said, to pitch forever until he cannot.
Fernando Rodney is not good enough to be on the 2026 WBC team for the Dominican Republic.
No.
Do we agree on that?
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't even good enough to pitch in the Dominican Winter League this past year. So,
or on the 2023 WBC team. However,
also true.
I just have a feeling that Fernando Rodney is going to find his way onto a WBC roster. I know that's not how it works. Maybe he becomes a naturalized Canadian citizen while pitching up in Hamilton.
Okay. Now we're talking. That, I think, does feel like the best, most likely path.
Rodney is an American citizen. I think he has dual citizenship now between the DR and the US. So if he got most of the time, if you get a third one, you have to relinquish one of the other two.
Mm.
So
that's no fun. You should get to collect them like Pokemon gym badges.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I'm a dual citizen.
No, I know.
If I get a third one, I think I have to give up one of the two. But like, he should just fly down to Nicaragua and see if they'll give him citizenship or something. You know?
I guess the point is, right, like, there are definitely teams that could use him. That I still feel pretty good saying.
Did you see this WBC news that, like, apparently something is happening in the Italian government about Italian citizenship eligibility that's like scary and reactionary and probably like related to xenophobia.
Is it going to impact our friend Vinny?
So there's a chance it does. I think it's like, again, if this is incorrect, I will check it and delete it from the podcast. But I think it's basically like you now need to have a grandparent born in Italy in order to be a citizen. Whereas that was not the case previously. And because the WBC rule is you need to have citizenship eligibility and not actually citizenship, it could reduce the number of players eligible for Italy.
So yeah, I don't know how that impacts our friend Vinny Pasquantino, who is already publicly committed to play for Italy again. But we'll see. But I think it's a good point about Fernando Rodney. We'll see if he can find his way onto some roster. Or the Dominican one, if enough guys say no. How many pitchers need to say no? I don't know. But anyway, this is an awesome story from Jason Beck, and I encourage everyone to check it out. Fernando Rodney is as ugly as it gets. So him and Rich Hill still pitching in 2025. All right, I think that's it. We have a big weekend of baseball ahead. We have four four-game series coming up. Orioles at Red Sox, Guardians at Tigers, Mariners at Astros, Brewers at Pirates. We should also mention that as you're listening to this, it is quite possible we have double mops in progress as both the Phillies and Angels are going for the midweek mops in Sacramento and Colorado, respectively. I think I said that backwards. But the Phillies are in Colorado, the Angels are in Sacramento, and they can mop on Thursday. We got the Dodgers at the Mets this weekend, which I know you'll be attending some of. And then the Dodgers are coming to Cleveland, and so is Jake Mintz. Jake Mintz will be here visiting me next week. Mm-hmm. But we will still be recording on this here computer on Sunday night for Monday. But until then, hopefully everyone has a wonderful weekend. Any final thoughts, my friend?
No.
All right. Thank you to TJ Brastel for producing. We will talk to you all next week.